Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
And yet, when I learned about it, I learned about it because I had been in a marriage, and my divorce was just like the things that kept getting thrown at me, the lies, and now I know them as gaslighting. The things that were coming at me, I didn't understand them at all.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, and to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today, escaping hell, how to get out of and survive a relationship with a narcissist. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Today, we have a truly inspirational guest for you, one who speaks from experience on the topic of surviving narcissist abuse, Tracy Malone. Tracy is the founder of NarcissistAbuseSupport.com, a global resource to victims from more than 145 countries. In addition, she is the host of two local support groups in Colorado, and she created a Facebook support group with more than 5,000 members. Tracy is also a popular YouTuber on the subject. Her channel has now reached more than 550,000 survivors, and she also has her own podcast on surviving narcissistic abuse, which you can find on iTunes and most other podcast platforms. In addition, Tracy loves making memes, and her narcissist abuse boards on Pinterest have been seen by more than 2 million monthly visitors. Tracy is a survivor who is passionate about raising awareness on this subject, and she's excited to share the empowering story of how she turned her life around to help others do the same. Her divorce from a narcissist was called the most tortured in her town's history. No one she had ever met had these crazy stories, which made her feel so isolated. 5 years later, and having now spoken to, coached, and taught thousands of people who are getting divorced from people with personality disorders, she understands the behaviors and patterns, and she helps others going through the process. We are so pleased to have her here today. Welcome, Tracy.
Thank you so much for letting me join you guys. This is great. Thank you.
Thank you also from me for being here, Tracy, and for joining us on this very, very important discussion on surviving a relationship with a narcissist. As you may know, we recently interviewed Megan Hunter, who is the co-founder with Bill Eddy of the High Conflict Institute, and she actually also touched on the subject of dealing with high conflict personalities. And within that subject, she talked about narcissists and narcissistic personality disorder, or NPD. And she actually mentioned that they are the most difficult personalities to work with, and the hardest to change. So I really think that that may be a good place for us to start. And if you could please just share with our listeners a good definition of narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder.
Narcissistic personality disorder is a personality disorder that affects so many people, and it's a stealth kind of personality disorder that most people don't even understand or see until the evil part of it arrives. These people that have this have no sense of value of other people. They really don't hold anything of value to anybody. They are abusive, and they don't start out that way. They start out extremely charming. They start out where they are sudden soulmates with someone, and most of the time, while they're in a relationship, their neighbors, their friends, their coworkers will never see the signs that they are being abusive at home.
Now, Tracy, I know you mentioned on your website and in your podcast that you yourself are a survivor of several relationships with narcissists. And this is what's led you to be so passionate about educating people on the topic. Would you mind sharing a little bit of your personal story? Because I think it will sound familiar to many of our listeners.
Sure. I did not know what narcissistic personality disorder was, or that there were people out there that were this crazy. And yet, when I learned about it, because I had been in a marriage, and my divorce was just like the things that kept getting thrown at me, the lies, and now I know them as gaslighting, the things that were coming at me, I didn't understand them at all. So I had just gone through this horrific divorce without a label, without understanding, just really confused as to what the heck happened. And I went into a rather quick relationship after that. I was swooped up by another narcissist, only this one was the reason I came to learn all about this. He had me arrested falsely, which is something that happens a lot with victims, because a narcissist will revert to anything that will kind of take you out of the way, get you out of their hair, and without any care or concern for anyone. So once I started to learn about that for him, people said, look up gaslighting, he's gaslighting you. I looked it up and it explained my whole divorce. It explained my mother-in-law, my sisters, my own mother. So there was a reason I didn't see this type of behavior. It was because I grew up with people that would ghost me. And I was used to my sisters just disappearing off the face of the earth for no reason at all. And so when I was in a relationship, that just was like, oh, that's not how normal people are in a relationship. So learning about it and trying to understand it, it put me into this seems like it's a calling for me to stand on a soapbox and never stop talking about it, never stop learning, and never stop teaching about it.
Well, first of all, I just want to congratulate you for not continuing to be in that victim mentality, you know, to see this as a calling, to see this as an opportunity. You know, that's what we really want our entire show to be about, you know, that the divorce and the bad things that happen as a result of divorce are actually opportunities for growth and change. So I'm really... I'm impressed that's what you see it as, and as a result have obviously helped many, many people. So I want to ask you about the warning signs of narcissists and how you can spot them. But if you could, just before you get to that, just give a little bit of a definition on gaslighting, because I don't know that everyone knows exactly what that is. And you did mention that term. So if you could just give a definition of gaslighting, and then go into what the red flags are for narcissists.
Sure. Gaslighting is a way that they try to manipulate the victim to think they're crazy. That means they're telling you stories that simply didn't happen, and insisting that you're the crazy one, that you don't remember it happening that specific way. So it challenges your mind to like really dig deep and question, did that happen? And over time, they slowly wear you down to the point where you are questioning yourself. And most survivors that I talk to just sit there with this dumbfounded look on their faces going, I know that didn't happen. And yet, he's convinced me or she's convinced me over and over, and finally they give up. There's no hope for them, and they just give up the reality that they thought was real, and they've lost themselves. So it feels really icky, if you would say. It feels that you have no control over what's going to happen, and of course you're walking on eggshells during that, because if you say, no, that's not how I remember it, you'll generally be met with anger. You'll be met with the conflict of the story. And they're telling you, no, this isn't how it is. And you're crazy. How could you believe that? How could you, don't you remember? And it's that kind of wearing down of a person that is their intention. There's a great movie from the 1940s called Gaslighting. And if you haven't seen it, it's really creepy with the old music that they used to play in the background. But the man would actually hide things on his wife and then ask her where her pearl necklace was. And when she would go look for it, she'd be like, oh no, he's going to get so mad at me that I've lost it. But he was like manufacturing this lie, manufacturing her to think that she was crazy. And that's what gaslighting is.
Can I ask, do the narcissists, the people doing the crazy making, coming up with this alternate version of what happened, do they know they're doing it? Is it like is this a plan on their part? So I know in that movie, I've seen that movie, and it is fascinating, but that was a very well thought out, you know, plan to make that person think they were going crazy. Do narcissists know what they're doing?
I believe they do, yes, because they're creating this alternate reality. And do they know that they're doing it to mess with your mind? That's to be debated. Do they stick to a story that they believe is true and just push that on? Yes, they do. So I believe that they are doing it intentionally, and there's a maliciousness to it. It's about taking away someone's power. And gaslighting, as all abuse is control. So once they know that they can control you by convincing you of something that didn't happen, then they can control you about every other thing in their life and in your life. So it's a stepladder, if you would, to further and further abuse. If they are not able to mind control you, because that's what gaslighting is, if they're not able to do that, you probably will not be in the relationship very long, because they're looking for someone that they can control. So as soon as you see this reality, which generally happens at the end, at the discard, there's three stages of abuse. So it's idealization, and then it's devalue, and after that comes the discard. And most people don't see this kind of behavior until they're out of it, or on the other side looking in going, oh, that's what that was. And so I do believe that they know it and they see it, because it's just, okay, if I can check that box that I got that person to accept this story that I told them, they've got one more step on the control ladder for you.
So back to, I think, Rebecca's question there then. So when someone's getting into a relationship or is in a relationship that's tortured, what are the warning signs or red flags?
Well, there's hundreds of them. There's behavior red flags. There's action red flags. At the beginning, they're certainly different, because the charm that these people have is what captivates everyone. Nobody goes into a relationship going, I want to be with the devil. They just don't. They come into it because the person is everything they've ever dreamed of. And that's part of the red flag kind of abusive behavior, where seems so natural to be sharing your story with the new person in your life, to share every detail that's happened to you before. But what they're doing is they're actually making a list of everything that has happened to you, knowing that they can also get away with it because you didn't see it. So when you're going into a relationship, it's important to know that anyone who rushes intimacy, rushes that relationship, I've heard people get married in 2 months and it was so whirlwind and it was so amazing. And yet the second they got married, like, the person completely changed. So it's in that stage, if they're not patient with you and not willing to give you the time, that's a sign that they're trying to rush you, to confuse you. By rushing someone into something and making them feel so wonderful, on a normal spectrum, that would be a great thing. But on an abusive schedule, that's where they're really just figuring out how to abuse you. And you'll start to see holes in the story. So lies are like gaslighting, lies that just don't make sense. And if they've told you one thing and yet the reality is something else, that's a huge red flag for someone to look at in a relationship. And if they start to isolate you, it's so, so stealth. You don't really think, oh gosh, he's cutting off my family. But slowly but surely, they pluck off your friends and they go for the weak ones first. When they meet your friends and your family, they're interviewing them too. How is your alliance? How strong are they going to defend and stick up for you? If your family or your friends say, well, she's a very good storyteller, they're going to use that against you later. So they're gathering intel from your friends. And then if your friends and family can be coerced later into becoming what we call flying monkeys, which is kind of like the witch and the Wizard of Oz used the monkeys to do her bidding. That's what flying monkeys are in a narcissistic kind of relationship. But as you're dating and you're interviewing this person, red flags to look for is, are there a lot of crazy people in their life? Is their ex a crazy ex? Are they an alcoholic, drug addict? There's a whole list of things that they will, you know, instantly attach to their ex. That's not normal. If everyone in their past is crazy, probably why would they be there? You know, there's something you have to look at. If they experience and display anger towards you for questioning them, they don't like to be questioned. And of course, in the beginning, you're not necessarily questioning. You're believing that love story. You're not going, well, that doesn't make sense. But if you start to question those things then and they get angry, that's definitely a sign that you have to watch out for. And if you feel like any single fight could end a relationship, then that's not a good feeling either. That's not something that you should be thinking is a good, healthy relationship.
Coming up, more from Susan, Rebecca, and Tracy on Escaping Hell, how to get out of and survive a relationship with a narcissist.
When you get into a situation where you're going into a divorce, to prepare yourself by knowing that every trick in the book is going to be used against you. Lies are going to be told.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including sex, love, marriage, and divorce, with sex expert Todd Krieger.
We need to understand what the message is of the infidelity so that we can address the problem rather than get so focused on the infidelity.
And now we return to today's show.
So, just a quick question. You know, could the gaslighting also be not just a way of controlling you or the other person, but also just a way of getting what they want, of justifying what they want? And, you know, I want to be able to do what I want to do. And so I'm going to tell you that we already had this conversation, that you agreed that I could do whatever it is that I want to do. You don't remember having that conversation? Oh, well, guess you're crazy. You know, I think it's some of that too.
Oh, I think it's definitely a lot of that.
Yeah. So, and do you think that, you know, Brené Brown talks in her book, Daring Greatly, about narcissists and how they're the most wounded of all. They carry the most shame. And so they have the most to cover up for. Do you see that too in your experience?
You know, it's really hard for anyone to diagnose a person with narcissistic personality disorder. And so I tend to lump people in, I don't care what the name is called. If the behaviors are these, then it's not a healthy relationship.
Right.
Note of them being wounded, the theories are that narcissists are sort of born out of their own trauma. And if they were raised in an abusive household, then you have a choice of either becoming a narcissist to protect yourself. You're not going to let anyone in. You're going to stop everyone from getting close, and this is following the pattern of how they were abused. The other option when someone has an abusive parent in their life is that they become a codependent, a people pleaser, someone that wants to help everybody and not make any waves. So you've got this push me, pull you kind of a thing. They're takers and we're givers. And so, you know, together we make a perfect match. And that's just the human magnet syndrome, as in Ross Rosenberg's book, is that we are attracted to the drama because we're used to it. And as far as them being able to heal, I don't think that they will ever be able to heal because it is inbred in them. Again, it's a protective mechanism to their own trauma.
Yeah. So how would somebody who wants to divorce a narcissist go about that? What kinds of advice would you give them about, you know, statistics, stories, ways to get out of it?
Well, the first thing is to get support, because you are not about to have a normal divorce. And again, most of the people that come into my groups don't even know they were with a narcissist, don't even know that they've been abused. So when you start a divorce, you're almost innocent at that point. You still have feelings of love and they have none. And then it's so clear in this horrific discard that most of them get to before a divorce that the other person had no feelings. They might have been married for 40 years, but they were just being used. And so when you get into a situation where you're going into a divorce, to prepare yourself by knowing that every trick in the book is going to be used against you. Lies are going to be told. And I think an important thing when you're hearing these in the courtroom, and Susan, you could probably attest to this as well, is to not react in the judge's eyes. When you're blindsided by lies and accusations in the courtroom, it's to take them offline, take them and understand them, and don't take them as a personal attack, because it's just a ploy. It's a tactic. And while we're sitting there going, how could you not love your children anymore? It's much bigger than that. It's something that without proper preparation for a divorce, you're going to lose in a very big way, because they go for the jugular. There's no question about it. If they punch, you know, they're going to punch harder. And if you're not prepared for that and you're in this innocent, it was a wonderful marriage, I want to keep it together, they're going to walk all over the victims.
You know, Tracy, that just rings a lot of bells with some of the things that Rebecca and I have spoken about, because, you know, as I think Rebecca mentioned just before we started this podcast, you know, not too many narcissists end up in long-term marriages. You know, these are not marriages that are successful. So we have certainly seen our share of divorces and for relationships that have broken down because of this narcissistic cycle, they go from bad to ugly pretty fast in the courtroom. And I was just thinking, can you share some stories of things that you've heard that narcissists have subjected their, I'll call them victims, to in the courtroom setting or in the divorce setting? You know, that might spark some understanding for our listeners.
Well, a narcissist will actually attack your best qualities. That's just a fact. So if you are a wonderful mother, there's nothing better or that's going to hurt you more than to be accused of being a terrible mother. And so they're going to attack the things that you most value. And so in that, I was attacked in my divorce with very false accusations. False accusations that I had stolen money and false accusations that I had forged paperwork. None of this was real, and yet they were the ones actually forging paperwork and, you know, projecting what they were doing. And yet I had to defend myself. I had to protect myself. And so many people will experience you're a terrible parent, and they'll have child protective services called on them when they are the most loving, caring parents. But if you see these things coming in, they are there to distract the judge. They are there to distract and draw out this divorce to be as long as possible. They're doing it for lots of different reasons. One of them is generally financial, that perhaps they have more money and they can rake you over the coals. And a lot of people end up going bankrupt from a $100,000 divorce. So,
making you suffer is part of the...
That's the whole thing.
And that's
what messes with people's heads the most, is that these false accusations, no matter what it is, it hurts.
But you get sucked into the trying to defend yourself or trying to rationalize their crazy behavior, and there's no rationalizing crazy.
No, and you never get to deal with the actual facts of what's best for the children in reality, because you're dealing with the accusations that you're a bad parent or something like that. So,
or that you stole money or whatever it is.
Yeah. So you're so busy dealing with all of that craziness that you never move forward with the actual divorce.
No, it's such a common thing to project out that someone is something that they're not, to accuse them so that they have to defend themselves. And that's the hardest part in going through a divorce with a narcissist. They are the high conflict divorces. They are the ones that don't end. I had 7 trials. I felt like Casey Anthony. I'm like, did I kill my daughter or something? I don't understand why we're fighting over this much. Why?
I admire you for continuing the fight, though, because, you know, even though it's hell to get out of it, and we talked about, you know, the name of our episode today is Escaping Hell. But you always used to tell my clients, and a lot of times it was the women who were more of the victim, but there's definitely men victims as well. But I would say to them, your choices are really, there's only 3 choices here. It's stay with the person, which as soon as I would say that, they'd say, no. Okay, so door number 2 is take your pat on the head and take exactly what they want you to take in the divorce, whatever the parenting plan is, whatever the support is, whatever the property division that they think is, fair to them, which is, you know, basically nothing for you and all for them. Or door number 3 is to fight for what's fair. I mean, those are really the options. And so, you know, I like what you said about, you know, making sure you have the right support, and because it's going to take every ounce of strength you've got.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it can cost that $100,000 that you talked about as well, Tracy. Those are, you know, that fight, even if it's the good fight or the fight based on facts, costs a lot of money in a courtroom.
Yeah. And it's just that sort of mad, rabid dog that just keeps coming back. You know, you just think, why can't this just end? Like, I'm not fighting you. Why does it have to keep? Why is something coming out every single time we go to court? And it confuses the victim. It really confuses them, because they truly believe that there was a real marriage and that this shouldn't be happening. So when these things happen, it really messes with their head.
Right. Because the goal is not to just pragmatically, you know, settle the divorce. The goal is to make you suffer.
And they'll fight for things that they don't even want. Like kids. This is
all the time.
Huge thing. They don't even want them, but they don't want you to get them. And they're willing to fight again without any reason or any real interest in, but it's just the battle. It's the battle to watch you squirm in court. And that's their goal. If they can fulfill that, they feel like they've gotten away with something. And when they tip you in court and they tip you in the parental parenting plan and they get you upset, be really aware that they could be recording you and then using that against you. There's so often where their manipulation of baiting someone is to push you to that point so that you do look crazy. So now they can go around to their next victim and the next victim and tell everyone how crazy you were. So really common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think we only have another minute or two. I just wanted to ask you as a last question, once someone is finally out of a relationship and they're still dealing with the emotional trauma, I mean, it takes a while to get over this. What can they do? I know you offer something called Sir Thriver on your website. Maybe you could share with the listeners a little bit about that.
Sure. So there's a lot of things that survivors have to learn about themselves to understand why they were a victim, why they didn't see it. And a lot of that peeling back of the onion and the layers are work that they have to do. So a lot of times it's that they just didn't simply know what a boundary was, or that they didn't know that they were a people-pleasing person, which is an asset that a narcissist will hone right in on. Oh, goody, someone's going to do my laundry for me. So you have to learn those skills. But so often when you've been through this whirlwind of crazy, you end up with PTSD. And sadly, most doctors don't even can identify that. If you go to the doctor while you're going through a horrific divorce, you're thrown on antidepressants, you're thrown on anti-anxiety, you can't sleep, you're thrown on sleeping pills. That's what a doctor would say. Most therapists, I think there's a number out there of in the high 60% don't even know what a narcissistic personality disorder person or relationship looks like. So make sure you're getting really good counseling. Make sure they understand what your plight is and how you can recover, because talk therapy is one thing, but getting into those memories and kind of helping deal with the anger, because you're going to have grief, you're going to have anger, you're going to have fear. Middle-aged people like myself going through a divorce, what am I going to do now? Everyone has those fears. So we did design this Sir Thriver recovery course to help people move past that anger and to take that memory out and almost detach the emotional attachment to even that day in court, that horrible day that you can remember. If you're holding on to that anger, you're holding on to their memory, and they stay attached to you, their baggage in your backpack, walking along into the next relationship with you. And so you have to cut that tie to that emotional bound. And also, we have another course which is based on forgiveness. And forgiveness, I think, is the wrong word here. It's, again, releasing them from your memory, releasing that pain that gets triggered every time you go by that restaurant that he proposed at, or you have these triggers that come. There's a way of getting rid of those. And we have an NLP course on there that is extremely powerful.
Neuro-linguistic programming. Oh, yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So Tracy, we thank you so much for joining us today. Obviously, you're passionate about this subject, and I think that comes through. And I think that you're sharing your story and taking your personal experiences with this really difficult abuse is something that's going to inspire our listeners. So thank you for sharing your story and your knowledge with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, Tracy, your website is narcissistabusesupport.com. And where can our listeners find other information other than at your website?
If they go to my website, there's a link to the podcast, to the YouTube channel, and to all my social media that they can just get their fill up of all the information that they need. And I suggest that people look for a local support group, because finding out that you're not alone is the key. And when people are going through this and they walk into a group, they can just feel validated, and that is a huge part of the healing process.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. For a limited time, get your free copy of Rebecca's best-selling divorce book, Breaking Free, a step-by-step divorce guide to achieving emotional, physical, and spiritual freedom at www.breakingfreethebook.com.
And for your free copy of Susan's Top 10 Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce, visit www.divorceinabetterway.com.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let us know what you liked in a review.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.